1991. Complete game? Don't count on it. The game. Chicago White Sox 9, Baltimore Orioles 1 at Memorial Stadium in Baltimore. Attendance 50,213. On Monday, April 8th, 1991. Weather 89 degrees. That's not a typo. Hall of Famers? White Sox manager Tony La Russa, first baseman Frank Thomas, and catcher Carlton Fisk, Orioles shortstop Cal Ripken Jr., and pitcher Mike Mussina. Game highlights. It was all Chicago on this day. Pitcher Jack McDowell hurled a masterpiece, striking out 10, giving up 4 hits, walking only 1, and completing the game with an efficient 124 pitches. On offense, White Sox 22-year-old outfielder Sammy Sosa began 1991 with career home runs numbers 24 and 25, accounting for 5 of Chicago's 9 runs. Sosa would finish his career 16 years later with 609 home runs, ranking him number 9 all-time. Historically, 500 home runs made a player a first-ballot lock for induction into the Hall of Fame. However, since Sosa first appeared on the ballot in 2013, he never received more than 19% of the votes. Election requires 75%. The cloud of steroid use hung over the heads of Sosa and other members of the 500 Home Run Club as evidence and details emerged during the decade that followed. Sosa denied ever using steroids. More in Chapter 2003. The story. Chicago's starting pitcher this day, 25-year-old Jack McDowell, was one of the most durable performers of his era. The White Sox staff led all of Major League Baseball in 1991 with 28 complete games, 15 by McDowell. He completed 38 of his 103 starts between 1991 and 93, tops in the American League, pitching at least 250 innings each season. I couldn't help but flash back to the opening day 1977 experience when two future Hall of Famers, Jim Palmer and Burt Blyleven, completed 10 innings each in a 2-1 Texas win over Baltimore. Completed. The concept is so rare today that it requires some explanation. This is the idea of having the same pitcher throw the game's first pitch and last pitch. The starter completed it. Consider this. BaseballReference.com lists the top 1,000 pitchers of all time ranked based on their number of complete games. None of the 1,000 are active pitchers. That bears reframing. Cy Young's all-time record of 759 complete games is not at risk. As of the start of the 2022 season, no active major league pitcher has completed more than 30. McDowell finished his career in 1999 with a modest 62 complete games, tied for 683rd all-time. In 1971, the Baltimore Orioles' starting rotation accomplished something that had happened only once before, the 1920 Chicago White Sox, and most certainly will never happen again. 4 pitchers on the same team won at least 20 games. The individual win for the pitcher has become another less important statistic, but I digress. Those 4 Orioles combined for 81 wins in 1971, 70 of which they completed. I'd seen all of them on opening day in the 70s. Pat Dobson in 1972, Dave McNally in 1973, Jim Palmer in 1974, 76, 77, and 79, and Mike Cuellar in 1975. That year, starting pitchers on the 24 major league teams completed 1,082 games. 20 years later, by 1991, starters on 26 major league teams completed only 366. The complete game was fading fast. By 2011, 30 teams completed 172, and in 2019, only 45. In the 1970s, a starting pitcher leaving before the ninth was giving his teammates in the bullpen something to do. In the 2020s, if a starting pitcher lasted past the sixth inning, he was giving his bullpen a much-needed break. The complete game is almost as dead as Tommy John's arm in the summer of 1974 before his landmark elbow reconstruction surgery. A starter's pitch count has become the new nightly metric of durability, or lack thereof. Pitch count only became an official statistic in Major League Baseball in 1988. It did not take long for it to become an obsession. ESPN, for example, only began displaying pitch counts during MLB telecasts in 2014. That ever-present, constantly updated number convinced us fans that as a pitcher approached 100 pitches, his outing was nearing its end. If he lingered past that, he was living on borrowed time. But coaches, players, and front office staff were tracking it closely years before we saw it on a regular basis. On opening day 1989, 46-year-old Tommy John, then with the New York Yankees, began his 26th and final season by throwing 107 pitches in 7 innings to earn the win. 10 days later, 23-year-old teammate Al Leiter threw a whopping 163 pitches in 8 innings of work, also earning the win. That year, starters would throw 140 or more pitches 55 times, including L.A. Dodger Oral Hershiser, who topped the list at 169 in his meaningless season finale. He had off-season arm surgery and missed the 1990 campaign. Knuckleballer Tim Wakefield of the Pittsburgh Pirates set the official post-1987 record in 1993 with 172 pitches in a single game, a mark that will likely never be broken. The unofficial record probably belongs to Nolan Ryan of the then California Angels, who reportedly threw 235 pitches over 13 innings against the Boston Red Sox. The more efficient opposing starter, Louis Tiant, threw fewer pitches, but lasted until the 15th inning. So what happened and why? Are players today just less durable? Hardly. Many books and essays have been written, analyzing and dissecting this evolution, attempting to package up simple categories of answers. We'll try three: mechanics, specialists, and money. Mechanics. Rule changes and differences from decade to decade make generational statistical comparisons unfair. For example, the availability of the designated hitter batting in place of American League pitchers since 1973 has impacted statistics for AL starters negatively versus their NL counterparts. But one change that universally altered the way pitchers needed to pitch in order to fool more hitters came in 1969. In response to the pitcher-dominant 1960s and a desire to generate more fan-favorite offense, the pitcher's mound was lowered 5 inches, from 15 to 10, materially altering the trajectory of the ball, especially from the game's most dominant pitchers. It required the next generation to develop arm-wrenching, stressful breaking balls that required a more scientific approach to the profession, an approach rooted in mechanics, sometimes coming at a great price in patience and dollars. If your mechanics are good, you can throw 75 pitches without being taxed, Hershiser explained in 2009 to senior writer Tim Kirkshen of the now-defunct ESPN the magazine. After 18 successful seasons with the Dodgers, Hershiser became a prominent baseball broadcaster with ESPN and later Sportsnet LA. But if your mechanics are not in order, as with some young pitchers, you could be worn out at 35 pitches. The light bulb goes on with a veteran pitcher about how to extend his career beyond injury and time by understanding the game. His years on the field and in the booth gave Hershiser a respected perspective. He'd learned and tried to convey that throwing hard isn't always the answer, especially to longevity. I'd tell our young guys that your best day is not your hardest day. That's a huge lesson to learn for young pitchers. Specialists. The emergence of specialty roles out of the bullpen also weighed heavily on the transformation of the pitching staff. Managers were increasingly bringing in a specific relief pitcher to face a specific batter. Kirkshen summarized it with insights from Bud Black, an accomplished pitcher over 15 big league seasons from 1981 to 1995, and experienced manager in San Diego and Colorado. "That's the biggest change," Black told Kirkchin. "We have 11-man, 12-man, 13-man pitching staffs today. We develop relievers in the minor leagues, college, and even high school. It never used to be that way." In the 1970s, Kirkchin continued, Orioles manager Earl Weaver often would break camp with 8 pitchers. And back then, when the game's best pitchers threw 25 complete games in a season, Weaver would let ace Jim Palmer finish what he'd started, asking, "Who do you want pitching in the 9th inning with a 1-run lead? Jim Palmer? Or the 9th best pitcher on the team?" But now, the 9th best pitcher on the team might come out of the bullpen throwing 95 miles per hour. And the 9th best pitcher on the team might be making a lot of money. Money. Major League money has made Hershiser's message hard to get across to young players. "Young guys today rely on stuff," Hall of Fame manager Tony La Russa told Kirkchin. "They are max effort on every pitch. And in the minor leagues, they're doing whatever they can to get from AA to AAA, so the stress level is higher. They're getting to the big leagues younger. There is maximum pressure to perform. And because of that, they are letting it fly. That's how young pitchers develop arm injuries and fatigue." While player salaries throughout baseball are staggering, they are especially high for the game's best starting pitchers. In 2020, of the game's 10 highest-paid players, 7 were starting pitchers, each earning more than $30 million per season. Not bad, considering they play only once every 5 days. And don't cry for the game's best relief pitchers. They may play more frequently, and typically for only an inning or less, but MLB's best relievers are in the $10 to $20 million range. In 1991, McDowell averaged just over 109 pitches per outing, good for fourth behind top dog Roger Clemens, who averaged 116. Once he was arbitration eligible, McDowell joined the then elite $5 million per year club. In 1996, he threw 3,439 pitches and earned roughly $1,570 per pitch. By 2019, the pitch count of the game's top starters hadn't changed much, although there were many fewer pitchers averaging more than 100 pitches per outing. That season, 30-year-old Steven Strasburg of the Washington Nationals threw 3,384 pitches, fifth in MLB, averaged 102 pitches per outing, and earned a little over $38 million, $11,328 per pitch, or roughly 7 times what McDowell earned 23 years earlier. Monitoring pitch counts game by game and season by season has become its own unique and sometimes controversial science as teams seek to balance winning with protecting their massive investments. Leave him in, take him out, let him play, sit him down. Take, for example, young Ross Stripling. The Los Angeles Dodgers invested heavily in developing Stripling over 4 seasons in the minor leagues. When he finally made his major league debut in April 2016, the Dodgers enforced their predetermined 100-pitch limit, even though he was pitching a no-hitter in the 8th inning. After the 26-year-old rookie issued a 1-out walk and with his team protecting a 2-0 lead over the rival San Francisco Giants, manager Dave Roberts took the ball from Stripling and handed it to Chris Hatcher, who immediately gave up a game-tying 2-run homer. The Dodgers eventually lost in 10 innings. The most controversial example came in 2012 when Washington Nationals general manager Mike Rizzo sat down his young star pitcher, Strasburg, in the middle of a pennant race and would not allow him to pitch in the playoffs. Strasburg had exploded into the majors in June 2010 as a 21-year-old phenom. 6 weeks and 12 starts later, he was heading for Tommy John surgery. After the arduous year-long recovery, he enjoyed success in 2012, but was on a team-imposed pitch limit. In early September, after a few more than 2,600 pitches and just shy of 160 innings, he was done for the year. Rizzo was widely, but unfairly, criticized as the Nationals made an early exit from the postseason. In retrospect, the decision is hard to second guess. With Strasburg near the top of his rotation each year, Rizzo's Nationals finished atop the NL East 3 times in 4 years, between 2014 and 2017, and won it all in 2019 behind World Series MVP Strasburg. After that disciplined shutdown, Strasburg's career trajectory continued upward, helping him to become one of the game's most dominant starters and earning him more than $100 million from 2013 through 2019. Over those 7 seasons, Strasburg started 194 games. He completed 2 of them. For the box score and play-by-play, visit OpeningDay5050.com.